Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge. Hillary McVeigh is a dynamic leader in diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, shaping the future of workplace culture. As the managing partner for DEI&A at Deloitte Canada, Hillary brings a wealth of experience in human capital management, enterprise transformation, and inclusive leadership. With over two decades of experience expanding global firms like IBM, Oracle, and PeopleSoft, Hillary has led large-scale transformation initiatives that not only optimize business operations, but also center inclusion and belonging. Her expertise in integrating technology with human-centered solutions has made her a powerful advocate for accessibility and equity in corporate environments. Today, we'll discuss Hillary's journey, the role of technology in advancing DEI&A, and how organizations can foster sustainable and impactful inclusion strategies. Welcome, Hillary.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you and I had a chance to get to know each other a bit yesterday. So I certainly know that you're human. And I know you're human because we both from our childhoods have things that we no longer wish to participate in. For you, it's skating on the Rideau Canal. For me, it's eating raspberries and rhubarb. However, we also are going to discover how human you are by using the Proust questionnaire. At the Employee Wellbeing Council, we believe in remaining human-centric or focusing on being human-centric in all that we do. So we're going to center on you because you're human. I'm going to ask you a couple of Proust questions, and he used these questions in his parlor games, Marcel Proust, as he thought that receiving the answers or hearing your answers will give us insight into your true nature. So are you ready for your questions, Hillary?
Ready. Hit me up.
Okay. Which talent would you most like to have?
It's probably a pretty typical answer. My number one talent I would love to have is to be able to fly and be able to do time travel so that I could go anywhere in the world quickly. I have a huge amount of wanderlust, really enjoy seeing different parts of the world, and hate how long it takes to get places.
And the jet lag that goes with it, right?
And the jet lag, yes.
Fabulous. If you were to die, well, not fabulous, if you were to die, I should say fabulous, pause. And your next question is, if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be, Hillary?
I would come back as my dog, Mindy, who is a very enjoyable, high energy, loves life labradoodle. And I think I sometimes envy the dog's life where they get so excited when they see people. They don't seem to have too many worries and they enjoy life every day.
Interestingly, in the interviews that I've done, flying and travel has maybe only come up once or so. And being a dog, though, has come up a number of times. So there's a lot of dogs living some really good lives out there, which is awesome.
Yeah, the dog envy, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Dog. Yeah, we all have dog envy. Who knew it was a thing? So, Hillary, let's start talking about your expertise, your vast expertise. And so you're a DEI&A expert. And so in this current environment, we notice that there's a bit of backlash or ennui as it relates to DEI&A. So how do you position this as a continued business imperative in our current climate?
Yeah, it's been fascinating times to watch and to see how people are reacting to it. And I think part of the issue we're seeing is that people have forgotten the original premise behind it. And it's almost being painted with a brush to say that it's a charitable endeavor, that organizations are focused on this. And that's not at all why organizations have been working so hard at this, right? It's not to be charitable. It's because it leads to better business outcomes. And that's been proven time and time again. We also, in Canada specifically, have a shifting population. And if organizations don't continue to pay attention to this, they're going to have a harder and harder time to be able to find people to fill their roles and be able to increase their productivity of their organizations. So to me, if I think about, so there's the aspect of the people who are already employed with organizations and making sure they're being as productive as possible and having a great experience, but also what they can deliver. If everybody around a table is the same, you aren't going to come up with very many new ideas. And I think everyone can agree with everything that's happening. It's the time for new ideas and being able to prepare for the future. And if you're a leader that doesn't want more ideas, I don't know too many of those leaders, right? Like, everyone's looking for new ways of doing things, and you can't brainstorm effectively if everybody has the same lived experience and has the same background. You're going to end up with a much smaller subset of ideas than if you had a diverse team and you're able to come up with lots of new ways of looking at things.
Exactly. So I used to say this is not about an ought, right? Like, we ought to do this. It's a normative. Yes, there's a piece that's normative, but really it is about the business and performance and engagement and having that employee experience that engages people to perform. And I also love the idea, you know, around this diversity of thought, right? If you're all sitting around the table and you all think the exact, not exact same way, of course, but that the fact that you're going to have a smaller subset, you're not going to have those outlying ideas that everybody initially says, oh my gosh, what a, oh, and then takes a moment and says, hey, wait a minute, that is novel, right? That is a good idea. So you also have obviously worked in the technology sector, PeopleSoft, Oracle, IBM, Deloitte for many, well, I won't say how many years, although it said a couple decades for quite
multiple decades. It's definitely more than two at this point.
Okay. Well, we leave that.
Like, we'll do the math.
We don't reveal, we allow our guests to reveal. So with your deep experience in technology and consulting, how can organizations leverage digital tools to create that more inclusive environment?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different aspects. I think a lot of organizations continue to struggle with the accessibility of their websites and the software that they use as tools within their organizations. And, you know, whether it's in Ontario, we have the AODA standard. You know, there's definitely a lot of work to be done to make sure that all the tools that an organization uses in their everyday can be accessed by people who need accommodations. So I think that's one area of challenge. I think the other another interesting one is AI, right? I think AI and the tools that organizations choose to use can really be a game changer and helpful for a lot of their neurodivergent employees. So that's an area that I'm really fascinated to see where that will evolve in the future. I think technology can really be helpful.
And I think as far as neurodivergency lies as well is then having leaders recognize how these tools expand the capabilities, the reach, whether it's for recruitment, engagement, or actually productivity for folks who are neurodivergent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of organizations are moving towards a focus on skills. And I think being able to define for your organization, what are the skills, and then making sure people can bring those to the table. And it may lead to new people being sought out for different reasons. I can see a future where, you know, when people are putting together what they need for a particular project, I could see them actively saying, I'd love to have someone neurodivergent in this role because they're so great at multitasking, right? Like being able to do multiple things or focus, like it's a different
or conversely very focused, right? That they hone in. Sorry I interrupted you actually, but no, hone in and laser in on something.
Yeah, absolutely.
I once had a client in the US who precisely had that. They had a program with folks and actively recruited out of a subset of folks who are on the spectrum, autism spectrum. And it was a hugely successful program because of the skill sets those folks brought for particular roles. And so I could see greater expansion on that. I want to come back a little bit to the accessibility when you're talking about accessibility. My question here is, and I'd like you to say I agree or disagree, or maybe you kind of have this right or wrong, is I feel like it's oftentimes overlooked a little bit in the DEI space, let's say, the accessibility. And yes, to your point, in Ontario with AODA, not sure the degree to which folks are compliant, right, as it relates to their websites and the work that they do. So what are some of the strategies companies can implement to improve workplace accessibility? I think that there's perhaps lots that can be done still, right?
Yeah, so much that can be done. We're really proud. We've just published our second accessibility plan with Deloitte Canada. So it's available on our website. Happy to share that with other organizations because we really want to share the lessons we've learned on our journey towards accessibility because it is an ongoing evolving space. I think it can be everything from office improvements to make sure that there are the right office environment for all types of employees. We get feedback from a couple of our ERGs, our employee resource groups, about things can be as different from it would be great to know in each office where to sit that's quieter because some of the office is very noisy and excitable. It's which offices have natural light compared to, you know, different types of lighting that's harder for people who have different conditions. They really appreciate sitting somewhere near a window that has natural light and that makes them have a better working environment. I think the other thing we focus on when it comes to accessibility is what can we put in place to support our neurodivergent colleagues? And that's an area that I think we're still learning. A lot of organizations are starting to understand that they need to ask questions about what's holding people back from being fully accessible and coming to work. I think hybrid work is a challenging one. And for some folks, getting into the office every day lets them, it uses up so much of their battery, their social battery, just getting into the office. They then want to save that best battery for being at work. So maybe it's better for them to not be in the office every single day. You know, you need to ask people individually what's best for them.
For sure. And I based on my daughter who is still in elementary school, but one day will be gainfully or must be gainfully employed. I'm also hoping that, right, we come to a world where we recognize also certain learning disabilities, for example, things that may not be visible. And we, again, with accessibility, we oftentimes think of things that we see, right? But there's also a lot of non-visible disabilities, so to speak, or abilities. And, you know, even for myself, I mean, I have an eye condition and people laugh at the size of font I need in order to do my work, especially as I'm, it's not just aging. There's also a keratoconus involved. And so, right. And so we may not think of these things, but as we move forward in the world of accessibility, there's all sorts of forms of accessibility that we can think about and as managers need to be open to.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all comes down to listening to people. They will tell you what the challenges are, right? So we, in each of our offices, have a champion that listens to these issues and tries to solve it. And we have a team that comes together that's cross-functional, whether it's IT, real estate, you know, our accessibility folks who work on my team under DEIA, we all brainstorm together. How can we make the work environment best for everyone?
Amazing. And so this also links really to well-being. And there's different aspects of well-being, or in the sense that people come at it from their perhaps their own expertise or their own thoughts and leadership. How does, for you, how does DEI and A link to well-being?
I guess when I think about it, for me, it's all about the I, the inclusion aspect. And I hear a lot of stories of people who have to cover parts of themselves to feel like they fit in at work, right? So I think if people are spending their time on that, that takes up a certain amount of energy. And it's not hard to imagine that if people can bring their full selves to work, that will allow them to focus all of their efforts on being productive and amazing, as opposed to worrying about what they need to say in front of certain colleagues or how they need to hide certain things that they need to be, have a great day at work, right? I think it's really important from a well-being perspective. You can meet people that are bringing their full selves to work and they just have a different energy about them than people who are concerned and not feeling that psychological safety in order to be able to share everything about themselves.
Great. Yeah. I mean, code switching is a classic, right? The thing that a lot of people who are racially diverse or diverse in whatever regard have to do in order to fit. And so to your point, it's psychological safety doesn't necessarily mean literally I'm feeling unsafe, but do I feel safe to be? Does that make sense? Right? Like when we think about psychological safety, there's the one, I'm not worried about somebody sort of attacking me psychologically, but is the environment one in which I can truly feel safe that I can not have to code switch, for example?
Yep, absolutely.
And so now let's switch a little bit to leadership and what inclusive leadership means. And so we talked about being hybrid and, you know, we are not, many of us are in hybrid work environments, not in the office necessarily 5 days a week. So in this hybrid and digital world that we live in, what does inclusive leadership look like and how do you see it evolving?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think to me, yeah, I'm trying to think of how I want to start explaining it. I think inclusive leadership to me always comes down to being curious and learning about people, right? It might sound very basic, but to me, it's giving room for storytelling. It's asking people, you know, what blocks them from feeling more productive and not assuming why people are doing something. Right. I think inclusive leadership is carving out time to get to know the person and not just diving right in. It's very hard sometimes in a hybrid environment. We all kind of jump from meeting to meeting. And there isn't that classic walking to the elevator or water cooler chit-chat time. So how do we build that into our day? For us at Deloitte, we use what's called coffee chats, where people book time with leaders and can share one-on-one. But I think sometimes to be a great inclusive leader, it's to carve out those moments in your day to make sure you are learning about your team.
That's great. And it could be at the start of a call, at the end of a call, in the middle of a call, right? Of a meeting, a virtual meeting. It can also be, I love that, coffee chats. I used to do that in an organization as well, where I would do also cross-functional. And I would say to folks, we actually can't talk about work, right? So there would be four or five people. It was a group chat. I was somewhat of a new leader, and it was during the pandemic, so it was all virtual. And I said, we can't talk about work. And I have to admit that at the start, it was a little awkward, right? Because they don't know me. I don't know them. And so it became largely me led, because, you know, I was the senior leader and I'm asking them questions. But over time, that really switched, and it became this ability to get to know each other. And we did kind of get to know each other as people as much as you can in somewhat of a, you know, artificial environment, to get to know each other as people. So I think I love that idea of the coffee chats and being intentional about carving out that time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. For some leaders, it's more challenging than others to share of themselves, right? I definitely, over the years, this is not just a Deloitte thing, but in general, have worked with people where they view work as being the time to be professional, and they find it uncomfortable to tell personal stories or anecdotes or share things about themselves that will allow others to open up. But I think what's exciting to watch is when you see someone try it out, and they receive positive affirmation from having done it, then they believe it and they understand it. So it's great to see in action, because I think for some people, it's not in their natural nature to be that way.
100%. And I used to be one of those people. I used to be very much only one of those people. Perhaps it's my half German, which, you know, is the side that is quite obvious. Perhaps it was, yeah, my half German, that I never talked about myself. I never talked about my personal life or anything. And then, you know, we had a gathering with some clients, and this is years ago. I mean, this is a good solid 15 years ago. And one of our advisors said, because he said something about to some people that I spoke three languages and that I'd lived in Europe and grew up in Germany. And the client said, I had no idea. Like, I didn't know any of this about a Joe, right? And he said to me afterwards, he said, people want to know you. He really gave me some strong coaching about people want to know you as a person as well. And I really took that to heart. And it was very uncomfortable at the beginning, I will say that. So I could fully appreciate, for the colleagues who might be listening that who are similar in trait, it's very uncomfortable, but you're right. People do want to know each other. I mean, they don't want to know everything, right? There is a reason there's TMI, but certainly they want to know some things about you, want to know that you're human.
I think especially in tough times, authenticity really gives people a sense of comfort, right? I think people need to feel comfortable. Everyone has different challenges that come up at different points. And if you haven't built that relationship with your leader, you probably will be hesitant to come forward when there are challenges, right? So I think it's really important to embrace that authenticity, and people can feel it when it's not authentic.
So. Yeah, I just noted that down, the word authenticity, Hillary, and that's the thing. So sometimes people use it as a bit of a catchphrase or banner, but what does it actually mean? And I think it actually means what we just talked about. One of the aspects is revealing things, is building that real relationship where you give and you take a little bit, and you ask interesting questions. You explore the other person too, right?
And I think what the big thing I always counsel leaders is what works for one person won't necessarily work for someone else. So I've often seen people try and emulate someone's style and it comes off as very artificial, right? Because they're obviously just following a pattern that worked for someone else. You need to find your own pattern that works for you. And that's when the real magic happens, is when people, it can feel so true compared to someone who you, I always make the joke of someone who walks in and says, insert personal anecdote here. And you're like, oh no, no, they've been told to do this, right? Like, yeah. Those are so awkward. You don't even know what to suggest. So I think everyone needs to find a way to be themselves.
Yeah, I use the 1980s management book anecdote, right? 1980s management book. Make sure to know everyone's first name and walk around the office floor at least once a day, greeting people by name.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that sort of brings it into the operations. So DEI oftentimes also, right, we think of policies and creating policies as it relates to it, but then we have to execute on those policies. And so leaders sometimes struggle and thinking about, they see this policy, they maybe can execute that policy, but it's so much more than that. So what are some practical steps leaders can take to embed inclusion into their daily operations?
I think it's a few of the things I've mentioned. Like, I would say, to me, it's like, make room for people's storytelling, right? Like, find different ways of learning about your team. If one thing didn't cause folks to open up, try something different, right? Because not every tactic will work with every group. And then I think it's back to asking people what blocks them from being productive, I think is really important. I think I see so many assumptions, and I think, you know, whether it's things like working parents assuming that they won't want to take on an extra role because they're going to be too busy, and people don't get asked to do these things. So I think there's very practical examples where you can't make those assumptions for people.
And so storytelling, I want to come back to, because, you know, in so many facets and aspects, storytelling is super important. And so you can ask people to, you know, in a meeting or, again, whether it's team or individual, to tell me a story about when. Or frankly, I was just thinking as you were talking about it, using this Proust questionnaire. You want to get to know somebody, maybe you can use some of the Proust questionnaire at a team meeting, and the joy it brings. There's a question also that I asked the CEO the other day was, what is your most treasured possession? And so, you know, you think about it. Okay, well, that's the thing, you know, a mug, a ball or whatever. Anyways, he told this story about, he was from the UK originally, about a football jersey. But it wasn't about the football jersey. It was a story that was attached to the football jersey from when he was 7 and he went right to those games with his dad. And then when he turned 50, right, his kids found him that jersey with his favorite player's name on it. And it was such a heartwarming story. And again, it just spoke volumes as to, you know, what was important to this gentleman. And so it wasn't about the possession. It was about, right, the whole story that goes around this possession. And so I think that, you know, some of these questions, when we think about them, because people sometimes don't want to talk about feelings, for example, like, how do you feel? Well, maybe we can get to those questions or get to understand people through some of these other types of questions that encourage them really to tell stories. And so that just came to mind when you were talking about storytelling. You also talked about, you know, making assumptions. And so this sort of comes towards the latter end of our discussion today. you know, we do make a ton of assumptions. I love the idea of the, you know, the working parent, or maybe they don't want to come on this project because we make that kind of assumption. And so we need to watch out for that and ask ourselves, frankly, maybe as we're making a decision, what assumption am I making here as a leader, as it relates to making a decision? But as we come to this session, what other practical advice would you like to share as for leaders? So what is one thing I can do today to create a more inclusive team?
I have a couple of points. I think one, build up your network of reverse mentors, right? Most leaders are, you know, not of the generation that are just entering the workforce right now. And I think it's really important. Reverse mentorship is a hugely powerful tool that allows people to expose where they don't know enough about a particular topic, right? So I think what we ask folks who do embark on reverse mentorship is to show vulnerability in areas that they want to learn more about, right? And to acknowledge that we are all not experts in every single new aspect of society, new parts of diversity, right? Things change regularly. The terminology that people want to be used, you know, like if it's something that's uncomfortable, if you say you want to learn more about it, people will help you learn about it, right? So I think that's one thing. And then I think the other thing leaders can do is give different people an opportunity to participate, right? Like to find ways to look beyond just the typical people that they always go to for things and use people that they don't know as well, right? Give different new folks on your team a chance to be successful. I think we all have a natural inclination to go back to the three or four people that we can trust that we know will do a great job. But to be truly inclusive, maybe it's asking the new person on your team that you don't know as well, giving them a chance to be successful. And then I think the other thing is just finding time, making time to try new things and new ways of working. Because I think one of the challenges we've got right now is people are always time constrained and there's always so much to do. We sometimes forget that to carve out time to try doing things a new way, and inviting new people to give ideas under is a different way of trying things.
I love that. So the reverse mentoring and also the trying new things really also demonstrate then to your team that you're a growth, that you believe in a growth mindset, right? That you're open to learning and have a growth mindset, which is something that I think the younger generation sort of inherently possess. And it's not just because they're younger. It's also just, you know, the way they've been raised and educated. And so as a leader, you will have the best engagement the more you show that you also have a growth mindset. I mean, who doesn't want to be with a leader who's always looking to grow and improve? Because that is what, you know, folks are also trying to do. So Hillary, just as a wrap-up question, I mean, you have now conveyed that it's perhaps even more than two decades. Again, I ask you, not you, Ariel. But when you think about your younger self, what's one piece of advice you would give your younger self?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I look back over my career, I often tell people the story that there was a period of time where I gave myself an excuse as a new mom to not push myself career-wise. And when I look back on that time now, I'm surprised that I could go as many years as I did without a growth mindset, because now it's such an important part of how I like to show up. So I think I would tell myself to make sure that every year you feel like you're learning new things. And if you're not learning new things, you need to challenge yourself to potential roles, right? And I did one role that I really loved and I was really successful doing it, but I did it for too long. So that's to me what I would go back and give myself a shake and say, you need to keep growing every year, because that stagnant mindset was not a great one. And it definitely took me a moment to get past it.
Super interesting. It's almost as if keep an inventory, right? Keep a bi-yearly or yearly inventory and say, what have I learned? What new skill, what new competency, what new knowledge have I actually learned this year? And if you haven't, if that comes out with a zero at the bottom of that Excel spreadsheet, then perhaps it's time.
Yep, agreed. And I think sometimes we expect other people to look out for us and do that for us, whereas it needs to be self-driven, right? You're really the only person who knows if you are learning new things.
For sure. Yeah, you're in charge of your own career, right? Your own path.
Yeah.
This super. Well, Hillary, on behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, I'd like to thank you so much for your time today and this interesting conversation.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for the great questions.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites While Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.